Good morning, welcome to Bank Chat. I'm Hugh Chiverton, your co-host. Today is Ada Wong. Ada, good morning to you.
Good morning, Hugh.
Do you have a right to be forgotten? A strange byproduct of the growth of the internet is that, for perhaps the first time in history, you're stuck with your past. Photos, comments made by you, comments made about you. Facts and lies, embarrassments and exaggerations will keep being available, apparently indefinitely. So the pictures of you as a drunk teenager will never go away. Now, some are claiming the right to remove material, and the highest court in Europe has ruled that Google should allow users to be forgotten after a certain time by erasing links to web pages, unless there are particular reasons not to do so. Do you agree that there's a right to control information about yourself that's irrelevant or excessive or misleading? Or is that just trying to fix history and a block on free speech? Give us a call with your thoughts. Our number is 233-88266. You can text 63935925, email backchat@rthk.hk, or go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, and comment there. After 9.20 this morning, we're hearing about calls for an ivory trade ban in Hong Kong. In our central studio, three wise men: David Webb, founder and editor of the website.com, Chester Sung, who's chairman of the Internet Society of Hong Kong, and Professor John Bacon-Shohn, who's director of the Social Sciences Research Centre at the University of Hong Kong and a member of the Standing Committee on Technological Developments. Maybe we'll start with you, Professor Bacon-Shohn. Thanks very much indeed for joining us once again. Which side are you on? Do you think there is a right to be forgotten?
Well, the first thing here is I think you somewhat mischaracterized what the court ruling was. They didn't say there's a general right to be forgotten, and they certainly didn't say you could remove anything off the internet. What they did say was that there are certain conditions under which Google should remove the link to that information. So the case that actually drove this was a Spanish guy who has been trying, I think, for a number of years to try and get information about him and a bankruptcy removed from the internet. And he tried first to get it removed from the newspaper website and failed. The court basically wasn't interested at all in whether that information was available on a newspaper website. So the only thing that they did agree, finally, is that under certain conditions you should be able to remove the links. And I think a lot of the characterization in the media, you know, the sky is falling, Google's suddenly going to have to censor the world. Well, Google censors the world hundreds of times a day, in the context of copyright information. So they remove links very frequently. This is not something new, and it's actually much more restrictive than was presented. So we already, as a society, believe that under certain conditions, access to information should be limited. So, for example, if you're talking about a rape case, we don't provide the information on the victim. If you have juveniles, we restrict access to the information about their criminal behavior. So there are a number of conditions. So I think the issue, most people do agree that under certain conditions you have a right to be forgotten. The question is, what should those conditions be?
Okay, the situation is surely that this is something which has been in the public domain, and there are requests to remove it from the public domain. That's what makes this situation special, isn't it?
Well, but it's not being removed from the public domain. Mm-hmm. What they're limiting is the ability to find it. It's not being removed. So that's an interesting...
It kind of is, though, isn't it?
But if you look at the data protection law, personal data is defined not just as being about somebody, but it's about somebody and you can find it in a reasonably practicable way. So I think this is an interesting approach, because we clearly do believe, as a society in general, that there should be some restrictions on how easy it is to find information. So that's what this is about. You're not removing the information, but you're making it somewhat harder to find.
Hmm. How enforceable do you think this will be, Professor?
Well, if this is in the US, good luck with that. I mean, the US legal system essentially says everything is publicly available, and the First Amendment says that it's going to be almost impossible to remove it. But, you know, under European law in particular, and I would argue possibly under Hong Kong data protection law, you might be able to persuade the courts in a similar way. But I think this is going to be a rather narrow situation. If the court judgment, as I understand it, said, you know, essentially you can't just simply say, I would like this to be forgotten. It must be the sort of information which would be a distortion if that is presented as information today. So, in other words, clearly the newspaper is, as a matter of record, saying that this guy was bankrupt at a particular time in history. The question is whether that's relevant information today. And I think in the case of criminal convictions, for minor criminal convictions, we already have a process that says after a certain period of time, these convictions are spent. But it's only minor convictions. So I don't think this is going to have a major impact.
They're spent, but they're not secret. You're not obliged to tell an employer, for example, about previous convictions if they're minor convictions after this certain period. That's
right, but it's also an issue of access. It's an issue of access. So, for example,
I mean, this has the effect of hiding them, doesn't it?
No, well, in a sense, yes, but I mean that's exactly what we believe. In other words, if that conviction
is spent, you may believe it. I don't. So please speak for yourself.
Well, as the law stands, we believe as a community that if it's a minor conviction, and you can then get a statement from the police saying that you have no conviction. Mm. Right? So as far as the law is concerned, that conviction is spent. But that's meaningless if everybody can search and find that, and it appears as if you know you are still a criminal. Now, whether or not that's the right balance is an issue for the community to decide. But I think this is consistent in some way with what we have agreed as a society.
You're somewhere in the middle. Can I put you like that? You sound a little bit...
Yes, I mean, I think there are situations where this is appropriate, but it clearly could be abused, and so it would be very important that it's only allowed, if you like, in quite extreme situations. But this idea that Google censors nothing is simply untrue. Every day they're censoring hundreds of links because it's to information which commercially we don't think the world should be able to find. Right, so if somebody sticks an illegal copy of this program up on a Russian website, and you can't easily get the Russian website to take it down, you could go and talk to Google and say, "I want the link taken away," and they would do it, right? Because they would say, "Oh, it's copyright information." So, you know, it's not that it doesn't happen; it's just this is a somewhat different context.
Okay, David Webb. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Do you share that view?
No, almost none of it.
good.
Okay, let's just deal with one thing. You mentioned information that you have posted on your Facebook page or wherever. Clearly, that's a matter of a contract between you and Facebook, and it does provide for you to remove your material. It's not a one-way publication. You have copyright, for one thing, over what you've written. It's a creative work. As a matter of the contract, it allows you to completely delete your account. But information that you've published in that page, your date of birth or some other piece of information that someone may have read, that is data, that is information that they now know, and there shouldn't be any legal restriction on their freedom of speech in repeating what they know. Indeed, that is embedded in the European Union's Charter of Fundamental Rights, the freedom of speech and expression, the right to divulge information and to receive it.
Is that right?
There's a logical fallacy to what the court has said. And it's this, that they say that once information is no longer, quote, relevant or becomes, quote, irrelevant, then a person should have the right to require Google to remove links to it, even if the publisher of that information, the newspaper in question or the radio station with its text archives, retains its freedom of speech and the right to have it on its website. They're saying that Google should remove links to it. But first of all, this carries the assumption that Google or anyone else is the ultimate arbiter of what is relevant or not. And surely if it's not relevant to anyone in this world, then the data subject, the person involved, wouldn't care who knows it and who doesn't. The very reason they're asking for it to be removed is because they find it embarrassing in some way. That basically demonstrates that it would have been relevant in some context to some person in the future. There's a very great danger in what the court has said because it basically opens the door to sanitization of one's past. The judgment also drew a distinction between, quote, people in public life, perhaps me, perhaps not, perhaps you, and people not in public life. And this would mean that the logical thing to do before you consider running to become a local village councillor or town councillor and embarking on your political career would be to contact Google and have all the embarrassing stuff, your drunk driving convictions or your failure to pay your TV licence or council taxes or something else, have all that sanitised and removed so that although it might have been mentioned in the newspaper once, it cannot be found. You end up basically airbrushing your own past and making it hard for legitimate conversation to be had about whether you are fit for the office that you're running for. John mentioned the restrictions that we do have, and there are restrictions, for example, on reporting the victims of sexual offences and also the identity of juveniles in court cases. But these are restrictions imposed at the get-go by the courts. The information never becomes public. So this is an irrelevant comparison. It's not information that's out there in the public domain and could have been repeated by anybody. The court also...
No, but the spent conviction does apply.
Now spent convictions, you mentioned the statement of no conviction you can get from the police. If you ask for one and you do have spent convictions, they will be listed on that statement with an asterisk. Okay, it's not a completely blank sheet. Secondly, that information may have been reported in newspapers or even announced by the SFC or someone else, one of the regulatory agencies involved, and it goes out into the public domain. Those newspapers don't have an obligation to sanitise or censor their own archives. It's still out there. It doesn't mean that it never happened. It just means that it can't be held against you in employment, and that's something that we've seen fit to put in law. I have no problem with the concept of prohibition against discrimination, but the fact of your conviction is still there. It may have been spent for the purposes of employment discrimination, but it's not a secret, as you put it. And so the ruling also brings up the question, what should a newspaper with an on-site search function do? Because a New York Times or a Bloomberg or a Daily Mail has a search function on its own website. Now, does that operation of a search engine on its own archives run foul of this ruling? Should it be that the Daily Mail has to censor the links that are produced when one searches a person's name on their voluminous archive of trivia on people's histories? Because the court, in their ivory tower, doesn't seem to think about the differences, the distinctions between a newspaper with a search engine and a generalised search engine.
Actually, that's not quite true. You're unaware of a previous judgment that was last year. There was a judgment last year which I think is complementary to this. This is the same court made a ruling. There was a complaint by a Swedish guy precisely about a public information in Sweden. And essentially the way this system worked was a public database which was published on the internet. And you could send an SMS to the website. And
I think that was 2008, and it was Sata Media in Finland, not Sweden.
Sorry, it's Finland. But in that particular situation, the court did indeed rule that simply providing the information, that public information, in that context, was publication. And so they said actually the publication exemption applied. So, and again, in this case, they declined to take action against the newspaper. They specifically refused to do that. So they said, we don't want to affect freedom of speech. That's why I think it's an interesting judgment.
Yeah,
all they
but that
said
wasn't...
was, we don't facilitate you finding it, but we don't stop you. So if you go to that website, they entirely accepted that you would be able to search on the website and find the information. So they have said, in effect, no, we don't want to take action.
No, because that was actually a more narrow case. It was about looking up a person's name.
I know, but in this particular case, this same Spanish guy tried to get action against the newspaper, and the courts declined to take that up.
Well, hang on. He wanted the newspaper to remove the article. That's very different from removing search links. Now, I'm asking you, what about an on-site search engine?
I see no problem with that.
That is just the same functionality as Google, except that it only searches that site.
All right, Chester Sung, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. Which side are you going to jump in on then?
Well, yeah, I can. I'll be dumped on.
I tell you, a circumstance that occurs to me is that if there are, and this does happen, and I've heard about this situation where there are, if somebody is on trial, for example, there'll be big headlines in lots of newspapers where somebody's on trial for something which may be very embarrassing, or maybe something which would prevent their employment in a career or something like this, maybe a sex crime or something like this, they're found not guilty. The verdict will be maybe buried away somewhere. But if a prospective future employer searches for news about this person, they will, and this does come up, then they will again and again come back to this, to a court case or something like this. So there's that where searches will be misleading, or there may be just facts that are wrong.
There will also be where
there's mistakes, and the corrections will be buried away, and much harder to find than the original error. And so when there are searches, falsehoods will come up about a person. What do you do in situations like that?
Well, I think that's different to me.
Just a song. Yeah.
Well, I think you're talking about a technical... you're assuming a technical, inefficiency or even technical problem of the available being available or being able to search, through the internet or public records. Because, theoretically, if everything works, then, all the history about that case should be able to be found. And that means both that, the person who was being tried for the conviction and the result of the ruling, should be able to try, and then the subject itself should be able to provide that proof. And if his prejudice about opportunity of employment, then he can take on other vehicles against the potential employer, not offering him a job based on a partial fact, And I just want to say that I agree with Professor Conchon that what this case is doing or what it means is only delegate, or make search companies or search engines or the like to remove the links. The essence is where the content is, where really the information is, and the information is not being forgotten because it's out there. It's just like. Professor was saying, it simply made it harder to be found, and it's still out there. This may actually bring up a worry that I have on what people would think of their own responsibility when they do and say things. It's like I think David was mentioning, people could airbrush their reputation and a record and all that because they can ask search engines to remove or ask organizations to remove their past records. So it's like that means if I'm saying something here, if I said something or did something in the past or I'm thinking about doing something, I can have the assumption that I can ask them to remove that record in the future. That means I don't have to be responsible for what I'm doing or what I'm saying. It's just a moral problem that I'm having.
So, Chester, are you saying that there isn't anything about protection of personal data on the internet these days? Or can there be protection of personal data?
Well, I mean, for the question is very broad. And yes, to a certain extent, but no to if you're assuming an absolute protection that's a dream. If that's what you're asking.
I mean, I think you can see the courts as trying to say, the data protection law says in principle you have a right of correction. The question is, what does right of correction mean when you essentially can't remove anything? So if we take Hugh's example, So,
we're
for
not
example,
for
newspaper. Well, no, his example was about a mistake made in a newspaper, which then has a correction. And you don't see the correction. So, I think in that situation, you would have a right to go back and say the newspaper must change their archive to reflect the corrected version. So that part's fine. Actually, that's not a problem. The issue is, when we talk about correction, is that information from the past still relevant today? Does it need to be put in context? And I think the issue here is, so, yes, you can go to the newspaper website and say, well, what have you reported about this particular person? And you can find it. But the question is, if you do a casual search on that person's name, do you see information which is relevant for them now? So that's really what the courts, I think, were trying to struggle with. Now, we can argue about whether they got the issue right or wrong in this particular context, but I think there is an interesting point to be made, that what information is still relevant and how do you evaluate relevance? I mean, you can pay Google to affect the search engine order, right, how things appear on that. So I think there are questions about what is relevance, and this is not about a general right to be forgotten, but the question is whether you are able to have some influence appears to be shown.
Relevance is in the
relevant.
Eye of the beholder. It's not in the eye of the publisher. It's, you know, and the truth doesn't become untrue over time. If somebody is libeled someone, that should be removed. There's a litigation system for that. If they've made an error in a reporting, they will nearly always put the correction on the same page, either showing the amendment or replacing the article altogether, so that is dealt with. To take the example of, say, someone who's been on trial and then found acquitted, of course, not everything will be published in the article before the trial ended. We don't know about the acquittal at that stage, and if you search and only look at one article, you won't get the whole picture. But it doesn't mean that every article on that subject should be removed because it doesn't tell the whole picture. It's up to the reader to find out for himself what subsequently happened in that court case. And, for example, three very prominent people about 50 yards away from me in the High Court are on trial for corruption right now. They may be found not guilty. That doesn't mean that we should expunge from the archives all allegations that were made against them. They were made against them, and they were found to be not guilty. That's just history. Shouldn't be airbrushing it, because those who... you know, what you're doing there is effectively creating sort of George Orwell's memory holes, where, you know, you call up the Department of Disinformation and say, hello, how can we help you today? Well, I'd like you to remove the following articles about me from the history. That's a very dangerous path that we head down if we do that. And the court, the EC, European Court of Justice, has basically not thought this through at all in terms of the contradiction between saying, on the one hand, that publishers can retain truthful articles in their archives forever because they are publishers, and on the other hand, Google isn't a publisher, and therefore it can't point at those articles and say,
Google has insisted it is not a publisher.
Well,
and
for
hence
the purposes
not...
of the law, they should recognize the practicality that Google does publish things. When you look at a Google page, it's publishing that page.
Google can't have it both ways. You see, Google has insisted that it's not a publisher in Europe because they don't want to be bound by the laws that bind publishers. So if you're not a publisher, then what
laws?
Are you?
I mean, you know, in terms of the practicalities of the Data Protection Directive in the EU, they should be considered a publisher, as should anyone who puts up a web page. The fact that their web page is mostly consisting of links and advertising doesn't make it not a publication. And if you draw a distinction between search engines and the original publications of articles, then you run into the problems I've described, that when you go to that publication and search its archive of millions of articles,
which the New York Times has,
it's performing a search function on its own archives.
But does it mean that Google has to be responsible for the content of that page, which is just a link on their web page?
Google has insisted it doesn't want to be a publisher because it doesn't want to be responsible for libel. So they have made that decision, and they argued that line in the courts. So that's, I think, the issue here, that we don't traditionally, when we look at publishing, we didn't have an idea about indexing, right? So this is the courts trying to struggle with the fact that this is part effectively of the data protection system. So I don't necessarily disagree with David that they are in effect a publisher. So the question is then, how do we handle their situation? Do we treat it if we treat them as a publisher, then there are a whole series of rules in certain countries as to what you can publish and what has to be removed and all the rest of it. Google's line all along has been, this has nothing to do with us. And so that they're protected in some ways by not being
change,
a publisher.
They may want to change that approach after this ruling.
I very much doubt
okay,
it,
now we are
much more restricted.
We are, but we'll have to take down links to libelous articles because otherwise we'll be republishing them. So, you know, that's maybe an easier thing to deal with than people saying, I'm embarrassed by my drunk driving conviction. Would you please remove that link to the newspaper article that tells the truth about it? You know, that the volume of complaints they're going to get and how on earth they... Well, what they're going to do, basically, is take the path implied by the judgment, suggested in the judgment, which is to say that they will use their resources to resist all applications until they're ordered to change them by the national agency involved. And the court suggests that they might have to, the complainant might have to go to that agency and go through all of their processes before they issue a directive to Google to remove that link. And that will sort of be so on the one hand, the court's raising expectations of how people could just, you know, go onto a web page and order Google to remove things, and practically they won't be able to do that.
Well, I mean, if you take the narrow view of Google's search engine functions, I think we are kind of convicting or holding if you will, like the postal service being guilty of drug trafficking, if some dealers uses the postal service to send drugs over, and this is dangerous because what it is doing, of course, Google may actually publishes other content on their webpage rather than just posting links, but in other circumstances. But then, you know, it's in this
okay, we,
case,
we,
you
we,
know,
but there's, there are better
sorry,
analogies
we,
than that.
Sorry,
Chester.
We've got a break for the news. Yeah. We'll continue in just about 3 minutes' time. We'd like to hear from you as well. Drop us an email, backchat@rthk.hk. The weather mainly cloudy with a few showers and some thunderstorms today. A few showers in the next few days. Sunny intervals over the weekend. It's warm, 28 degrees now. Relative humidity is at 88%. Back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the news on RTHK.
Welcome back. This is Backchat on a Thursday morning. We're talking about the implications of a ruling from an EU court on effectively on the right to be forgotten on the internet. A ruling which said that a Spanish man had the right to request Google to remove old or outdated search results in his name. The ruling actually said that Google could be required to remove data that is, quote, inadequate, irrelevant, or no longer relevant, or excessive in relation to the purposes for which they were processed, and in the light of the time that has elapsed. Looking at the implications of this, we have with us in our central studio Professor John Bacon-Schoen, who's Director of the Social Sciences Research Centre at the University of Hong Kong, a member of the Standing Committee on Technological Developments, Chester Sung, who's Chairman of the Internet Society of Hong Kong, and David Webb, founder and editor of website.com. We're also joined now on the line by Francis Fong, who's the Honorary President of the Hong Kong Information Technology Federation. Our email address is backchat@rthk.hk. That's backchat@rthk.hk. Or you can give us a call, 233 88266. Later we'll be talking about hearing about calls for an ivory trade ban in Hong Kong. An email from Adrian, who says, what's the point in removing links to information about someone's past or information left lying around online? It should go hand in hand with the information being removed. In the case of the Spanish man, which set off this whole issue, he has a history of payment default on a property he had. This kind of information can also be searched from other records about him. Effectively, there's no change. Your past is your past, and almost anything can be found out anyway if you pay the right people the right money. Take a look at the scandal with News of the World as an illustration of what enough money can do in terms of accessing private information, says Adrian. Thanks very much indeed for that. Backchat@rthk.hk is our email address. Francis Fong, good morning to you.
Morning.
And which side are you on, the privacy or freedom of speech?
I think the user should have the right to remove information which is misleading, But actually, it also recall a case from recently by the private the PCO that asking a apps on online to stop because it had a lot of information of some people in the past, but it's quite controversial because the those information can also be searched online, but not only by the app. It's only because the app is so convenient that the people can get it.
Actually, it's not only that. I'm sorry, but you're mischaracterizing the case. It's also that they were linking information, and they were failing to correct it, and they didn't provide any mechanism for correction.
They did. They had a reporting function to allow people to contradict information that was false.
But they were matching information, which is clearly in contravention of the law.
No, it's not. Not clearly at all. They backed down without taking it to court. They should have defended themselves. You're talking about the Do No Evil smartphone application, for those who haven't heard about it. It was an application that allowed you, in one convenient app, to search for a name, to find matches to that name. It might not be the exact person you're looking for. You might find it, particularly if it's a John Smith or a John Chan, rather than a very unique name. But it will give you some pointers for further research. Of course, you don't expect, again, from one article to have the whole picture. And it would have provided a very useful social utility. If you're thinking of, for example, letting your flat to someone you've never met before, you might want to check whether they've been recently discharged from bankruptcy or have a history of payment defaults or disputes with their other landlords. And that's information that is in the public domain. All that this app was doing was making it easier to find. And that's one of the great beauties of the internet, that it has revolutionized access to information that previously was hidden away in published but hard to find disclosures.
Okay, so Francis Fong, what was the point you were making about the app?
I think that's why I'm saying this is controversial, because it's so easy. And we look at that apps, and we actually find out that if you pay, for example, like somebody to go to search, they can find the same thing. It's just only because the commissioner's
objection was that it was being made too easy. Not that you couldn't already do it if you paid a private investigator to go to the records. And anyone who'd been
that's
taking
not what
notes,
he said.
Yes, he did. I read the report.
I have also read.
He
the
said
report.
It added he value. He said it made it too easy to find things.
That was not the core of his judgment. Actually, the core of his judgment was about purpose. This was inconsistent for the purpose. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that, but that's what he said. But it also involved matching. It involved matching of personal data without due account of whether there were mistakes in that matching process. So there were a number of other issues with that app. Now, I agree. I don't accept his judgment as it stands, and it would have been very helpful, actually, if they had taken him to court. Or rather to the tribunal to see what the judgment was. Because the problem with that, actually, is if the judiciary, if you look at the judiciary website, there is no purpose stated whatsoever anywhere on their website.
Well,
the commissioner said you should be able to imply the purpose, which I think
is ridiculous.
His
suggestion of narrow purposes is not backed up by the facts. The Chief Justice at the time, Andrew Lee, in a speech in 2001, said that we have put our judgments online so that the public can access them. There was no narrower purpose than publication. And all that the smartphone app was doing was publication. John calls it matching, but in fact a person's name is not personal data. That's the one thing in the ordinance that's very clear. And if you search for that person's name, you're not searching with a piece of their personal data. You're not trying to match anything other than their name to publish documents, and that was the very useful function.
Francis Fong, sorry, are you saying that that case implied that we accept there are restrictions on access to information, previous information?
Well, I think the grey line is actually very fake.
Sorry, say that again.
I think it's what I'm saying is quite controversial, because grey line of this whole thing is very thick, actually.
Francis, you did say that misleading information of people should be erased. Now, who decides what is misleading and what's not?
I'm not a court, so hard to say.
Other
side of misleading thing, actually, when we try to remove misleading thing, then also we will come to another point that the people will think then the freedom of press or other thing will compromise. So,
I mean, another issue that
the prove is on the court or what? I don't know.
Well, I think
another issue the case raises is what is the difference between an online newspaper archive and somebody blogging today about the same subject when they're basically both producing web pages? Because if they, taking the court's ruling, information should be removed from the Google links linking to old articles, but somebody already has that information because they read the articles at the time and made notes about it, and now they're blogging about the case. They're creating a new page that will be picked up by the Google search engine, and so you end up with a kind of whack-a-mole problem where the same person will then have to write to Google and say, this blogger has mentioned my name about the same information that I'd asked you to...
No, I think it's quite clear.
Over and over again, you have...
But the courts are very clear. I think it's very clear from the judgment they wouldn't see that as a problem. Right.
In other words,
it's not old information; it is out of date. So clearly, if you're discussing the case, that would be fine. So both the blogger would have no problem, and in 10 years' time, you might be able to come back and say Google should remove the link. But clearly, it is a link
writing,
to something.
If you're repeating information that the court has ruled is now irrelevant and shouldn't be mentioned, you're mentioning it, but it's still old information. But the court is saying that Google shouldn't link to old information. That particular piece of old information should not be linkable. But anyone who publishes it is going to, unless they've put a block on search engines, the search engine is going to find it on their Facebook page or wherever it is that they've mentioned this information. So if somebody mentions John's, I'm sure you've got none of them, John, but let's imagine you have a drunk driving offence from 20 years ago and someone who knows you mentions that on their page, and Google will pick it up through its search engine. John has to write to the Google again, having already done so, and say, please remove this again. Practically, it's a rather odd situation. And this Spaniard is never going to lose references to the fact that he defaulted on his tax obligations 20 years ago now. There's going to be repeated references to that all over the internet.
So what are the implications of this court's ruling then?
Chaos, basically. And impracticality and false expectations
binds,
on the public's part.
It binds all the EU countries? How would that work?
Well, in theory, the EU countries will have to take reference to it. But if you look at the judgment, as David has pointed out, they've said that you shouldn't just be able to casually do this. Google might well be able to resist in most cases. So I think actually it's only going to be a few people who are going to be able to really get things removed.
What it could do is clog up the data protection agencies in each country, which don't normally have massive budgets, with applications of this nature, because Google will just bounce them all across, in our case to the, well, we're not in the EU, but if we were, to the Privacy Commissioner. And that person or agency will then be so bogged down with all these complaints that they won't be able to do the proper things they should be doing, like protecting your medical records and my bank statements from public disclosure. I mean, there is a very sensible part of the privacy laws which says that you can't willy-nilly disclose private information about individuals, but that's very different from trading in the public domain area, which this court has now done.
But I think if you look at the other way around, the data protection, the officer for the whole of the EU... and all this, the individual data protection officers have said that they want a right to be forgotten. So I think this is going to force the EU to come up with a proper legal framework and decide under what conditions it is reasonable to be able to remove links.
I think
that will push them very hard to come up with a solution, and clearly they have to come up with something that's practical.
Yeah, one interesting thing here is that the... it was an unexpected ruling because the Advocate General to the court had said the opposite. And the European Parliament has recently passed, but it's not yet been approved by the European Council, a new law which includes a right to be forgotten, whereas they thought the previous law didn't have one. So what I think might now happen is some rethink about this, and perhaps they might start thinking about people's right to remember as well. Removing or watering down what they've put into this proposed new law, which would otherwise open even greater expectations of things that can't practically be executed. And the European Commission's own information agency, which is a different department, had written a paper about a year ago saying how impractical it would be to expect to have a right to be forgotten.
Francis Fong, did you want to comment?
I have a question. Practically, what if the newspaper make mistake? I mean, and then it's also on the website, and the newspaper itself can be in public library searchable, you know, then how do they make the change? I mean,
well, the newspaper that's
different. Then somebody can take action directly against the newspaper and ask them to correct their records, what their archive says.
But this is public already, and then it's delivered to the library.
Well, the printed versions won't change.
Against the data protection law says it has to be practically accessible. So again, you'll come back to whether you can index it.
There's nothing.
So if you're talking about it, if you're talking about digital databases, then you can insist that the digital databases be corrected. But clearly, you can't expect people to go back and change the print versions. But that's not covered by the data protection law.
Nor can you expect someone to go around and with scissors and take out articles that show of information that should no longer be mentioned from public libraries.
Sure. So, I mean, it does. So, the data protection law already covers the issue if it's accessible. If it's not accessible, it's not covered. So, this is different because this is about the finding of it rather than the information itself.
I mean, there are technological alternatives, aren't there, Chester Song? I don't know if you know about this. For example, I mean, along the lines of Snapchat, for example, where there's communication.
But Snapchat failed.
Sorry?
Yeah. Right, Snapchat got into trouble. Maybe you didn't see that article, Hugh, just this last week. They had a settlement with the Federal Trade Commission where they admitted that actually their claims could not be followed through because people can clearly capture the image before Snapchat can delete it.
And even themselves, they keep records of the images, so that's totally
You can use one camera phone to take a picture of the screen of another one. So
yeah. I mean, it sets it in their own service agreement with the customers that they keep records of the images for possibly further use, and that's totally a failure. In that sense.
Anyway, you're talking about private communications. Yes, there are encrypted systems.
No, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the principle, basically. I'm talking about that people, for example, would use Snapchat because they're less likely, let's put it like that, it's less likely that the material, and you'd have to deliberately, capture that material if you wanted it for whatever reason, rather than it being, passively available forevermore. So there might be a trend to do that, and another possibility, of course, is that the Google links lapse, that the links have a time limit, and that they're there for 5 years, and then they disappear, and they're constructed like that. Well, so we could think about not having these things.
Well, wouldn't
there
that be
forever.
Terrible if you couldn't, for example, search Google for information on the handover because it was 17 years ago? Or you couldn't search information on the removal of Tung Chee Hwa from office and why exactly did he step down, because that's too old. I mean, you couldn't just put an expiry date on information.
Even if you talk about the link, there's only the link, the information is still there. And I wouldn't really rely on the technology to protect you from being able to being searched, because, the technologies that you mentioned, which try to protect your anonymity, but then at the same time, they are counter technologies that would counter, attack that and make it useless, and then they would simply, people would just get the false impression that these technologies can protect them for whatever they do and whatever they say. And I don't think this is how we want to see, the society will become.
Yeah, I mean, the internet has revolutionized our access to information in so many beneficial ways, whether it's people in third world countries able to get educational material much easier once they have access. Whether it's researching your ancestors and doing genealogy research, or simply trying to learn about history, and it's all been a very positive thing. There are some
the vast majority,
99.9-something recurring percent. The only thing that people are now complaining about is, in some cases, how easy it is to find information. And I think that's just a great thing overall. You have to look at the much greater good here.
Well, but I think it is helpful to reflect on, is there anything that can be done? I mean, for example, What about context? So, I mean, I think your suggestion of links that die is not feasible. But, for example, there's no reason why there shouldn't be, we shouldn't have additional context. For example, how old is a piece of information? Because I think the whole model of the data protection law, the problem with the data protection law is that it assumes that you're effectively treating the world as one big database, and the question is the information correct today?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Brett Page...
Let me finish. That doesn't deal with historical information, but the question is, what is the context? So if this is information that was correct, if you like, 20 years ago, and it's not a statement of today, then that's very different from a state of information that you're checking and saying, well, what's true today?
Mm. Okay, we're talking about the practical feasibility, the technological feasibility. There's an interesting book by a guy called Victor Meyer Schoenberger at Oxford.
Well, I've read that book.
Now, have you read it?
Yes, I
do. You have? Okay, called Delete, The Virtue of Forgetting in the Digital Age. And we tried to get him on this program.
Well, he was selling a book.
Yeah. He's been to Hong Kong before.
Has he? All
and
right.
I had an argument with him then. Because he, for example, thinks that Google Flu Trends is a wonderful thing, but it's a failure. So he doesn't always feel...
Although web pages don't go yellow with age, they do normally have dates on the articles. You do know how old information is.
What he talks about is having an expiration date, basically. He says that digital storage devices, cameras, mobiles, computers should automatically delete information that's reached its expiration date. He suggests that users, when saving a document they have created, would have to select an expiration date in addition to the document.
You can tell he's not historian.
On their hard disk.
Not a historian, probably descended from George Orwell or something, I don't know. But
that's totally
can we really, I mean, in this internet age, can we really erase someone's digital footprint altogether?
No.
Too late.
No, you can't.
Well, I mean, too late. I mean,
if you don't want information to be published, then you don't.
Well, David referred
it.
to Facebook. I mean, actually, even getting everything removed from Facebook is not a simple matter because a lot of information is shared. Right. So, for example, if I put up a picture, then you say, OK, I can take it down. But what if somebody else puts up a picture which I'm in? So clearly...
their picture, not yours.
Exactly. So in that sense, solitary person
if you didn't
who has
want to
no
in the picture, you should have hidden from the camera.
Well, exactly. So unless you don't believe in any form of social interaction, then it's very difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, it's out there. You know, the thing is out there. So, you know, what you talk about is it's not technically or practically feasible anymore because everything is out there for so long and everything is so cast.
But I do think there is another important element. I mean, this is perhaps another discussion, but the whole issue of public records, when we wrote the original data protection law, we said in the report that the government should review all the public databases and think about what the purpose was and specify the purpose. Which the government generally hasn't done, and they haven't thought through.
But again, it raises false expectations. We had this whole argument over the company's registry and the publication of ID numbers not so long ago. Singapore has done the opposite in their wisdom for once. In their new privacy law, which takes effect in July, they have said that information which is publicly available, and that doesn't necessarily mean for free, but available to the public, is not it's subject to this law.
Yes. Yeah, but they've also said that all government information is not subject to the law, so that's not a very good indicator.
Well, but the point being that information in registries, if it's out there, it will be fair to do what you want with it, to republish it, to analyse it, to compile it, to aggregate it. And Singapore will have a lot more innovation in that space than Hong Kong has because of the fear that's been... fear of repression from the Privacy Commissioner, basically, after his act.
As opposed to repression from the Singaporean government, which isn't bound by the law.
All right, OK, well, this programme will be available on an archive on RTHK. Only for another year, though, actually. We just keep stuff up there for a year.
Isn't that terrible? You're deleting your own archives.
We do delete our own archives, but because we...
That's terrible.
I'll buy you a new hard drive,
Hugh. The good thing is that we everything that was broadcast is available for a year afterwards, and I don't know of any other radio stations that do that. With six channels, it's all available, but only for a year.
Tell your masters that hard drives are cheap now. You can 2 terabytes.
It's a lot of information, actually, for 6 channels, 24 hours a day. Anyway, that's another discussion for another day. Thank you very much indeed to David Webb from WebWebsite.com, Chester Sung, the Internet Society, and Professor John Bacon-Shone of the University of Hong Kong, Director of the Social Science Research Centre. Also joining us on the line, Francis Fong, who's the Honorary President of the Hong Kong Information Technology Federation. 9:25.